I saw OJ. And some other guys said, that's OJ, man. Let's go talk to him. He was out there doing some camera work. So I go over to him. I said, Mr. Simpson, my name is Eric Dickerson. He said, how you doing, man? I said, fine. I told him, I said, 2,000 yards in high school. I said, he said, really? I said, yes, sir. I said, I'd like to break your record one day. He said, well, good luck with that.
I'm Chris Long, and this is American Prodigies, Becoming Great. On this podcast, we highlight the fascinating career journeys of current and former football players. Each episode, we take you on a trip through a player's life, and along the way, explore what it means to be great. Because greatness comes in all shapes and sizes, and every path is one of a kind. Today, we're going to tell the story of a player who broke some of the biggest records in our sport. Records that still stand decades later. Records that might never be broken. And he did it all with style. Unique style. No one looked like this dude. And sure as hell, no one played like him. He's a man who wasn't afraid to stand up for himself and what he was worth. Today? Yeah, that's pretty commonplace. But in his day, not so much. And because of all that, he attracted more than his share of bad press. But here's the thing you gotta understand about the NFL. Talent usually wins out. And it's debatable whether anyone who ever played this game had more of it than this guy. And we're lucky, because the guy's a natural born storyteller. He's as close to an open book as you can get. Our subject is Eric Dickerson. Here's the bio on Eric Dickerson. He was born in 1960, raised in Sealy, Texas, about an hour west of Houston. Sealy wasn't exactly a big town. Eric literally chased cows for fun as a kid. But it was definitely a football town, and Eric played for the Sealy High Tigers. Eric's parents, surprisingly, weren't really sports people, but they supported their son's athletic pursuits.
You know, people don't know this about me. I was adopted. I was legally adopted. You know, my great-great-aunt adopted me, like my dad. And so my dad was, I would say, best man I knew, the best man I ever knew. I mean, a true Christian man, not the guys that's, you know, the holler about, I'm a holy, you know, oh God, this, wasn't that kind of guy. I mean, he walked the walk and talked the talk.
His dad had a saying, all you do, do with your might. Things done by halves are never done right. As long as Eric applied that mindset to football, he'd be happy. Despite his parents' support, things weren't always easy. This was small town Texas in the 70s, after all.
Coming from a small town in Texas, you know, and back in segregation, you know, I grew up in segregation. When I went to the black school, then went to the white school, is that you a tiger. Right. I mean, we kids all knew each other. You know, yeah. You a senior tiger. That's what it came down to. And when you put on that football uniform, the guy next to you, you don't see his color. It's not about your color.
Nope.
Hey, this is my guy. This is my teammate. Mm-mm.
Eric felt a brotherhood with his teammates. But that same kind of respect didn't always come down from the coaching ranks. And that almost caused Eric to leave the sport for good.
I quit football at one point, and a guy, I'll never forget, I'll tell you a quick story. A guy's name was James Abernathy. We call him Shaq. A little short guy from a town over 12 miles away called Brookshire. And I didn't like my high school coach. My high school coach, I mean, just making plain and something. He was racist. He had never coached blacks before. He came from East Texas and came to coach, and all the black players quit, all of them except one. And so he came by my house, and I know if he gave me something to pull up. And I like Shaq. I think I was a sophomore. And he pulled up, and my mom said, that's Shaq outside. And I walked up to him and said, hey, Shaq. I said, hey, Ms. Dickerson, how you doing? She said, can you mind if I take Eric and talk to him for a minute? She said, sure, take him and talk to him. So I got in the car with him and rode around my little town. And my town is only 2,000 people at that time, one red light. And so he said, Eric, man, I heard you quit football. I said, yeah, man, you know, I don't like that coach, man, blah, blah. I just told him how I felt. And he said, man, let me ask you a question. He said, so what do you see around him when you ride around this town? I said, Shaq, I don't see nothing. He said, exactly, Eric, there's nothing here, Eric. He said, let me tell you something, son. It's funny how older people can see things you don't see when you're a kid. You know, think about it. I said, I was 16 years old. He said, Eric, look. He said, you're one of the best athletes we've ever seen in these parts. Now, I'm thinking, really? I mean, I'm 16. I mean, I'm like, he said, Eric, I'm telling you. He said, we see something in you that we don't see in other kids. He said, you really should go back and play football. He said, I'm not saying that's your way out. He said, but it could be your way out to get your scholarship. He said, I know your mom and can't afford to send you to college. And they couldn't afford to send you to college. He said, so if you don't want to play in Sealy, he said, come on, play in Brookshire. We'd love to have you over here. So I said, okay, you know, I'll think about it. So, you know, we talked some more. And I looked back, he was so right. He said, man, he said, just go back and play. And just, you know, he said, I'll never get his word. He said, that white man has his, Eric. He said, don't worry about him. Sure enough, I went back and told my mother what he said. She said, Eric, I told you that. I said, I don't like football. She said, son, I don't like you being a quitter. She said, I don't like that sport, but I wish you'd go back and play. If not, she said, you can play in Brookshire. I'll drive you to Brookshire every day. It was only 12 miles. But I said, okay. So all of a sudden, the coach came around that summer and started talking to all the players. And then my best friend called me, Gary. He said, hey, man, has Rap Harris been to your house? I said, no. He said, he's on his way over there trying to get us to come back to play. I'm like, okay. So sure enough, he talked all up. She came back and played. And it wasn't no, I'm going to say, it wasn't a feel-good story, one of those stories. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this much. We came back and played. We won a state championship. We won our first state championship, you know, and my senior year and senior. And that was a great feeling.
Besides earning a state championship, Eric also ran for 2,000 yards his senior year. Remember that number for later. That made him one of the most highly recruited players in the nation. Huge programs like Oklahoma, Texas, Texas A&M, and USC were vying for him. Recruiters would even come knock at his door at 1 a.m. to try to get an edge on other programs. I kind of wonder how his parents felt about that. USC almost wooed him over, and his first trip to L.A., well, it was nothing if not eventful.
I got recruited to go to USC. That was my first recruiting visit. That was the first time I'd ever flown on a plane.
Wow.
A big plane, like a real plane. You know, and I came out here on my recruiting trip. And I'll never forget when I got off the plane, scared to death, you know, and I saw the mountains, man. I'm like, wow, it was a trip. I'd never seen mountains before. So I got off the plane and Coach John Jackson was there to pick me up, but he wasn't there yet. So when I get off the plane, I'm standing there and you don't remember me, but they call the Hari Christians. And right. The Hari Christians, they had the white robes and stuff and the bald heads. And that's when people come to the gate. So they surrounded me. I don't know why they picked me out. I guess I looked lost. They surrounded me with tambourines. Hari Krishna, Krishna Hari. And I'm like, I'm just standing. I'm like, what? And people walking by looking. And so I went to get Coach Jackson, grabbed and said, come on. I said, what's that? He said, that was the Hari Krishna. So that was my first experience coming to L.A.
Not long after that, Eric had an even more meaningful encounter.
When I went over to USC, man, that was a great visit. I mean, I was just in awe, you know, University of Southern Cal, all the great players they had. My favorite player was O.J., and on that visit, matter of fact, we were out because I came for the Rose Bowl game. Right. The Rose Bowl, and they played Michigan in that right. Rose Bowl game. And I saw OJ. I'm like, man, I had to meet some other guys. I said, that's OJ, man. Let's go talk to him. He was out there doing some camera work. And then I said, man, I'm going to go say something. That's my favorite player. That's why I played running back.
Right.
So I go over to him. I said, Mr. Simpson, my name is Eric Dickerson. He said, how you doing, young man? I said, I'm fine. He said, where you from? I said, I'm from CB, Texas. Mm-hmm. They're recruiting. I said, yes, sir. I said, what position? I said, running back. I told him, I said, 2,000 yards in high school. I said, really? I said, yes, sir. I said, I'd like to break your record one day. He said, well, good luck with that.
That is so good. At the end of the day, Eric wanted to be a Sooner and play under Barry Switzer, but his mom didn't give Oklahoma the okay. So what would his second choice be? Well, what happened next is a piece of sports lore. According to legend, the Aggies gifted Eric a gold Trans Am in return for committing to A&M. Some called it the Trans A&M. Eric took that sports car and drove it right down to SMU instead. I mean, what was A&M going to do about it? If they claimed he took the car, they'd have to admit to giving it to him in the first place. It's really a brilliant move by young Eric Dickerson. Eric's always maintained that his grandmother bought the car. I think it's safe to say that if Eric Dickerson played college football today, he'd have much more than a gold Trans Am.
The universities are making all this money. The presidents are making all this money. The coaches, you know, the head of the NCAA. Why come the guys who are really doing the work, the grunts, you know, that's playing the game, they should get something. I've always said that for years, you know, that I felt like that. And I don't care if it's girls, boys, sports, whatever. I think that you should share some part of the revenue.
At SMU, under Coach Ron Meyer, Eric proved himself to be a force of nature. Sharing carries with Craig James, the backfield known as the Pony Express, was a dominant combo.
Look at Dickerson knocking people down. All the way down to the 26-yard line. Holy cow. Pitch to Dickerson. Blocked by Drayton. Dickerson is gone.
Pitches back to Dickerson. One man to beat. He beats him. He may go. 10-5. Touchdown, Eric Dickerson. 62 yards.
McElhinney gives to Dickerson. It's a touchdown.
Incredibly, despite splitting the workload, Eric still beat Earl Campbell's Southwest Conference record for yards and attempts. The result, in 1983, the Mustangs went undefeated, ending the season with a win over Dan Marino's Pitt Panthers in the Cotton Bowl.
Our final score here once again in the 47th annual Cotton Bowl Classic, Southern Methodist University 7 and Pittsburgh 3. And the player of the game from SMU is Eric Dickerson, who carried 27 times for 124 yards.
Eric said he didn't mind sharing carries because that just kept him fresher once he got to the NFL. And when the league came calling, Eric was ready.
Los Angeles Rams selects on the first round running back Eric Dickerson of SMU.
The Rams have picked Dickerson.
I was fortunate enough to get drafted, you know, to the Rams. Mm-hmm. John Robson recruited me. And so when I got to the Rams on draft day, you know, it was different. You didn't go to New York. You came to the team, possible. So I came to the team. And the 41st saw me, said, I finally got you, which is funny because he recruited me in high school.
Now it was time to make the transition from the college game to the pro game. And it's not an easy one.
It was way different from college. It was way faster. I'll never forget my first experience in training camp. When I, you know, got into training camp, and we were in training camp 2 weeks before the veterans showed up. And John Robson said, look, when the veterans show up, it's going to be different. You know, it's going to be faster. They'd be quick. I'm like, man, please, it can't be no faster. I mean, because they had a few veterans there. Like, you had like 15 running backs. You might have 20 receivers. Anybody else could walk on. And so I'm like, yeah, okay. And I'll never forget, it was Jackie Slater, speaking of Jackie, and Gary Peter, and we had pass protection. And man, Vince Ferragamo was a quarterback, and you know, he had the red jersey, not the red jersey, you couldn't touch the quarterback. And they did all this movement, and you know, and it was like, rawr! And the blitz came, touched the quarterback. I'm like, wow. And it was a guy named Otis Grant, he was a receiver from Michigan State. I said, man, that's too damn fast there.
Yeah.
So I said, Eric, get in. So I'm going to get, I got in. I'm like, damn, I'm nervous now. The dude said, ah. And my man was here on the right. But then all of a sudden, something happened. I get the defense moved. Now my side went back to the backside. And I didn't know it. So he came and touched the quarterback. Eric, who's your man? I said, I guess him. He said, get out, son. You'll get somebody hurt. I said, no problem. So that was my first experience with
And pass pro is the hardest transition generally, for running backs too.
It's the toughest. It really is. It's tough because, you know, it's a lot of movement. In college, it's not back in the NBA, it is now. In my days, guys, when they got in the defense, they just sit there. And the pros, they were moving to the snap of the ball. And that was a lot, you know, for a college kid. And then you got these big ass linebackers that are big as I was 6'3" and they were, you know, 6'3", 6'4".
And what were you really weighing?
225.
And yeah, these guys are 250.
Yeah, 250. Yeah, man. But the thing is, they're getting like a 7-yard sprint.
Yeah.
I got to try to stop it.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. I mean, I think people don't realize how hard that is. But, you know, that was my experience with the National Football League.
From the get-go, he was a workhorse for L.A.
Dickerson into the end zone. Eric,
unreal.
Look at John. The Falcons know about Dickerson because when they lost 27-21, it was Dickerson who carried the ball 8 times on a 98-yard drive that gave the Rams the winning difference.
And he was already breaking records.
The one that I've always said that's going to last the longest, it's going to be very difficult to break. Maybe one day a guy break it, I probably won't be here. It's my rookie rushing record. It's 1,808 yards, 20 touchdowns. As a rookie.
308 carries, I believe.
380 carries.
God damn, that's a workload, dude. Crazy thing is, Eric's actually selling himself a bit short here. He had 390 carries. It was a singular achievement for a singular player. There was no one who looked like Eric. An intimidating size for a running back, 6'3", 220, wearing every single pad you could imagine, flak jacket, neck roll, you name it. And to top it off, his signature prescription goggles.
Wonder glasses.
No one played like him either. Before, during, or since. Quick, physical, slashing, nimble, and deceptively fast. Here's what he said when I asked him if there was anybody playing today who reminded him of himself.
Nah, no one really. And I'm not saying that being arrogant. I just haven't. I mean, like, you know, I think you say any back. Like, I've never seen anyone run like Barry Sanders.
Right.
You know, I haven't seen a back run like Earl Campbell. You know, Derrick Henry. I mean, every guy has their own style. No, you know, I was big, I was fast, and I think people took it for granted that they thought I wasn't fast. I mean, I won't forget I played when I was the Rams. Leroy Irvin, defensive back here. And I mean, he used to argue about, you know, who's the fastest? I said, Leroy, you can't run me. Mm-hmm. You're too big to be that fast. I'm like, Leroy, I can run now. I mean, we argue. Yeah. I said, Leroy, you can't run me. I said, I mean, it was just funny. So I'll never forget. We go over to play the Jets.
Right.
And we're on the plane and say, it's a defensive back over there, Holmes. He said, man, if you break, man, he can run you down. I said, Leroy, he ain't going to catch me. I'm telling you, I said, Leroy, I can run. I'm telling you. I mean, it was funny. It became funny. So sure enough, Chris, what happened? Second play of the game, toss left. I break on the left side. Who gets behind me? Holmes.
And you knew it. And you knew it in real time.
I didn't know who he was. I didn't know. Somebody behind me. I didn't know who was behind me. All I know is that he couldn't catch me. He could not catch me. And at that point, I never forget, because John Robinson thought I was always jogging in practice.
Right.
And he came over after that run and said, hey, I guess you were running fast in practice. Because like he was jogging in too.
I said, yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, that was a curse sometimes, because people thought I wasn't trying, and it wasn't true. I mean, I had it all the time. So I was at a bar one night in L.A. And, you know, I go to clubs and sitting there talking, and guys get to talking. The guy like, man, you know Eric Dixon? I said, yeah. He said, man, you ain't that fast, man. I said, dog, don't let that TV fool you now. Man, I'm telling you, I ran track. I said, I ran track too. So we drinking and talking. And finally, I said, let's just take it outside.
Yes.
He said, all right. I said, let's go. So, man, all of us get up, go outside. I'm got me here. Don't get hurt. I said, I don't get hurt. I said, what you want to run? He said, well, give me a jump. I said, wait a minute. You said you can outrun me, brother. Give me a jump. You in the pros. I said, okay, I give you like a 5-yard jump. So we ran something that couldn't like 50 yards. Man, Chris, when they said go, I was right next to him. And I beat him so easy. And I'll never forget when he said, man, you don't look that fast on TV. I said, where did I tell you? Don't let that TV fool you.
Yeah. Eric was maybe the most exciting player in the most exciting town. After all, he was playing in Los Angeles in the 80s.
Let me tell you something, Chris. It was like the Wild West. It really was. It was like it was no camera phones. It was like, man, you should have been there, man. You should have saw it.
That's why you're good. That's why you're a good storyteller. That's why you and my dad are good storytellers. Because there's no fucking like, hey, let me pull this up on my iPhone.
Oh no, it wasn't none of that. Thank God. I'm gonna tell you, thank God.
Yeah, for a lot of guys.
It was a lot of stuff. It was a lot of stuff that was going on back in those days.
Yeah.
In those days that you didn't want to get on camera.
He knew he'd made it when he started getting recognized by movie stars.
I was at a restaurant. I was at Nicky Blair's. It was on Sunset. That was a hot spot on Friday and Saturday night. So it was a Friday night. We were playing. We were in town. I was with them on Friday nights. And so I knew the owner, Nicky. I look over and I say, man, that's Clint Eastwood. I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm like, dang. And so I'm like, man. I don't know, I'm sitting there. So Nicky came. I said, man, is that Clint Eastwood? He said, yeah, you want to meet him? I said, no, I don't want to. He said, Eric, come on, he'd love to meet you. I said, no. He said, no, come on, Eric. So I get up, nervous as I don't know what. I walk over and he said, hey, Nicky, be tight. He said, hey, Eric. Man, you don't even know. That blew me away, man.
Yeah, said, by name.
By name. I said, how you doing, Mr. Eastwood? He said, I'm good. He said, I'm a big fan. I said, so am I.
That's
you know,
cool, man.
You know, we didn't have no camera phones. So you take no pictures.
Yeah.
So, you know, just shook his hand and you know, he said, you know, thanks for being a great player. I said, man, thanks for all the entertainment you've given me.
On his USC visit, it didn't take Eric long to call his shot. He wasn't shy about laying his goals out. He was set on breaking O.J. Simpson's record of 2,003 rushing yards in a single season. O.J. told him, good luck. They say luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Well, Eric had been preparing for this moment since he ran for 2,000 yards in high school. And come 1984, just his second season, the opportunity presented itself.
Dickerson, first down, up the middle. No one's going to catch him. Touchdown, L.A. Dickerson turning the corner. Look at that acceleration. Out of bounds. First down inside the 15. And Dickerson, second effort. Touchdown, Rams. Eric Dickerson. And he may be off. A 51-yard run by Eric Dickerson. And when you have Eric Dickerson on your side, you can get back a lot of yards and points in a hurry.
That year, Eric was unstoppable. No one could catch him. Fast forward to December, the second to last game of the year against the Oilers. Eric needed a little over 200 yards to break OJ's mark, and he came ready to play. despite a distraction or two.
It was the night before the game. It was Saturday night. And I said, come to the hotel. I said, get to the hotel early. She said, you got a game the next day. I said, don't worry about that. I said, just come to the hotel. So I'll never forget, Chris, man, that night, that morning, man, we had sex. I mean, early, like a couple hours before, they said, Eric, you're going to be tired.
No, that's a myth, is it?
I said, I'm not going to be tired. I never forget that. And I had 215 yards that day, so I wasn't tired.
Kill. I get the sense that's what's happening with Eric. Look at it. He seems to be getting stronger as the game goes on. The number, 2,007 yards. Nobody has ever done it better.
You know, I would say this, man. I said OJ did it in 14.
Yeah.
I did it in 15 games with one extra game to go. I had one extra game.
Yep.
And I always say that because that shows you how hard it is to do.
Yep.
You know, Chris, I always feel like this here. Do I want somebody to break the record? No, I don't. I mean, I always say, I mean, come on, let's be for real. But if a guy breaks the record, so what? He breaks the record.
Yeah.
I mean, that record has lasted 37 years.
Eric was fresh off of putting up 4,000 rushing yards in his first two seasons. These were numbers nobody had ever seen before. And naturally, he felt he deserved a raise. But not everyone agreed with him, especially the media.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, you know, that was kind of like I was a guy all after the money and all that kind of stuff. But you got to understand the story, you know, and it's like back in those days, the media was different. You know, you didn't have a chance to, or you didn't have social media.
Yeah.
You know, when the media wrote something, it was true. People believed it. And that was the narrative. You know, you're a bad guy. You know, you're ingrate. You know, I was called things I never heard of. I mean, I didn't know what an ingrate was. I didn't know what a malcontent was from the country. I didn't know that.
They recycled malcontent for OBJ, I think. There was like, you remember that unnamed source? It was like, I haven't heard that fucking word in football in 20 years. So, yeah.
I think it started with me, I swear. So, you know, I think the killing part was that how it affected my mother. You know, my mother said, Eric, I hate that crap. You know, I hate it because I know how I raised you. You know, I know what kind of boy you are, you know, son you are.
After holding out for 47 days, the Rams granted Eric an extension. Despite missing a couple games, Eric still put up over 1,200 yards rushing in 1985, helping the Rams win the division and make the playoffs. In a game against the Cowboys, Eric delivered one of the best individual playoff performances ever, rushing for 248 yards and two touchdowns on 34 carries.
Dickerson picks up where he left off. It's the bye-bye Blues. It's over. Dickerson ran for 55 yards earlier, 40 yards this time, 227 yards today. He's earning his money on his new contract.
The season ended the next week when the Rams were no match for the 85 Bears. In the following season, Eric returned to full form, rushing for over 1,800 yards, on over 400 carries, helping the Rams make the playoffs again. And again, Eric wanted a new contract. After a few talks with the brass, it looked like it wasn't going to happen, so he demanded a trade. Here's a football player who was ahead of his time. On Halloween 1987, Eric Dickerson was traded to the Indianapolis Colts and reunited with his old SMU coach, Ron Meyer. Eric got what he wanted, but it was far from a perfect match.
You know, the funny thing about that situation is that I don't feel an affiliation to that team. I mean, and I'll tell you why. The coach has some good fans. They have some really good fans. But that was one of the first times that I'd ever been on a team that was really a jealous, divided football team.
Really?
I'd never seen it before because I didn't have it in high school. I didn't have it in college. And I didn't have it at the Rams.
Right.
And I wasn't the only one that thought, man, I just talked to one of my buddies I played with at the Colts. I talked to him about it. We talked about it a couple months ago. I said, man, let me ask you a question. I said, did you feel like that team was really jealous and divided? He said, Eric, no doubt. He said, that was one of our problems. He said, that was one of the big problems with the Colts. He said, everybody was jealous of everybody. He said, when we talked about getting you, and I said, I'll never forget, man, they ain't getting no Eric Dickerson. Man, they ain't getting, that's a lie. They ain't getting him. They ain't coming here. He said, I saw you walking through the locker room. I'm like, damn, they did get him. I said, so maybe they're trying to win around him. He said, man, Eric, he said, and you know, that's one thing that I think people realize is that on a football team, even a job, you have to be close knit to be successful. Yeah. I mean, you have to have the pieces, you know, that, you know, everybody's not going to get along, but the vital pieces need to fit. They need to have the same goals. I mean, and we didn't know, we had so many jealous players, man. I mean, it was really disheartening to see it. And I, like I said, never seen it like that before. And then another thing is that I'd never seen, well, first of all, when I got there, imagine being told certain places that you shouldn't probably go to. You know, you shouldn't go to, like, it was places with a Villaburg. Like, it was towns, I forgot some of the name of the towns, like Brownsburg.
Right.
Don't go out there, you know. I mean, and you know why.
That's, yeah, like worse than Texas.
Oh, way worse than Texas. Oh, man, way worse.
The vibes were off in Indy. In the face of all that, Eric still managed to rush for over 1,000 yards in 9 games in 1987. He helped the Colts make the playoffs for the first time in 10 years.
Inside the 13, and Dickerson breaks the tackle, touchdown. The great one threw that. Well, it's a three-way trade that has all of the clubs involved very happy right now. Buffalo 8-1, they can't complain. They've got Bennett. Rams doing well. They're 7-2. They've got all the draft picks. And Indianapolis has this man, Eric Dickerson.
Over the next 2 years, Eric averaged about 1,500 rushing yards a season. And in 1988, he notched his fourth rushing title and became the fastest player ever to 10,000 rushing yards. He was putting up good individual numbers, even though the team was not making the playoffs. Then the wheels started to fall off. Eric was dissatisfied with the offensive line, and he wanted a new contract. He held out, and in return, he received a team suspension. He finished the season with 677 yards, and the Colts fans had turned against him. In 91, it only got worse.
Man, it was bad. We were 1-15 that year. Never forget this. And this is one of the reasons why I have really hard feelings in everybody at Indianapolis. And I was dating a girl that was there at the game, and she said, after the game, they took a banner. You know, you hang a banner over the rail that says, you know, we love the Colts. You know, we love the Colts. They took a banner, hung it over the rails, and had a picture of a black baby in an Indian-style position with 29, with fried chicken on one side. I had money on one side, watermelon on one side, and fried chicken, and it's like eating fried chicken. And they let that stay up there till halftime. I never forgot that. And matter of fact, some of the players, they thought it was funny. I can tell you how jealous we were. And I said, man, I said, dog, that's you. I said, it's just check out my number on it. You're black. They went, oh, yeah, that's messed up. All of a sudden, they got it then. And I'll never forget my friend. We still a friend in Holly. She said, Eric, I started crying. She said, that was hurtful to me. I said, Holly, imagine how it made me feel. And I'm out there trying. I'm out there playing. That's one of the reasons, man. And it was some, don't get me wrong, it was some good Colts fan. It really is some really good Colts fan.
Yeah.
But that, you know what they say, you know, I just get over it. Man, you don't get over that easy.
The Colts lost their first 9 games. Ron Meyer was fired, and Indy finished the season 1-15.
I loved the game of football. The love I had for it. And I mean, when I say I loved it, Chris, you know the feeling, man. I loved everything about it. And I said the sad thing about it is, it's a game that you love so much. And at the end, it's a game that made me hate so much.
Before the 92 season, Eric was traded to the Raiders, where he played with my pops. You spent 1 year with my pops, which I totally forgot about. It was in 92. You guys were teammates. And
yeah,
I don't think the Raiders were as good at that point. What was... You got any dad stories that aren't going to get him in trouble?
Not really. No, you know, Howie. You know, Howie was a guy that just came to work, played, and went home.
Yeah, he's a simple dude in that respect.
That was
it's about, hey, get my money, hey, work my craft, go home and spend time with my family.
That was Howie. I mean, you didn't hear about Howie going out. It was, you see him at practice, you see him at the games, and boom, after that, you see him to the next practice.
Yeah, he was telling me stories about when he went on the road, he used to take his little suitcase with his little portable VCR So he actually brought like a VCR to the hotel and he was in there watching tape. I don't know if that's bullshit or not, Dad. But it makes you sound like you were like you were not sneaking out for curfew. Yeah, yeah. But times have changed. That's funny as hell, man. Eric claims Al Davis told him the Raiders would trade Marcus Allen when they brought him in. Instead, the two stars split carries. Neither one was very happy with the arrangement. Eric had some flashes of brilliance that year, some vintage 100-yard games, a 40-yard touchdown run, but he was just about at the end of the road.
Eric gets the ball. Eric has his first 10-yard run of the season.
Goodbye.
20, 30, 40 yards for the touchdown.
It just exploded through there.
After a brief stint with the Falcons in 93, Eric's career was done. He went out as the second all-time leading rusher in NFL history. And in 1999, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. In 2019, he was one of the 12 running backs selected to the NFL 100th anniversary all-time team. Around that time, Eric got an unexpected phone call. It was his high school coach, the one that almost made him quit football.
He called me about 3 years ago. And I hadn't heard from this man in years, but he knew a guy that I knew from Vegas. And the guy called me and said, "Hey, Eric," I said, "What's going on?" I said, "What's going on, Dana? How you doing, man?" "I'm good, man." He said, "Man, somebody want to talk to you." I said, "Okay." So he put him on the phone. And Chris, as soon as I heard his voice, I knew exactly what it was. My heart started beating fast. You know, I was like a kid all over again. I said, "How's it going?" He said, "Hey, Eric." I said, "How's it going, Ralph?" He said, "It's going good." I said, "Yeah, man." I said, "What's up?" He said, "Eric," he said, "I just want to talk to you." He said, "I want to say, man, you had a great NFL career, great college career." He said, "I just want to apologize to you." He said, "I was an idiot." He said, "I just want to apologize to you." I said, "Ralph," I said, "man, thanks for saying that." Because, I mean, you know, when you're a young kid, you know, you think you're right, but you're not sure if you're right when you get older.
Right.
And I just knew how he treated us. It was wrong. And I guess later he saw it too.
That's an incredible story, like that thing coming full circle. I mean, and big of you to accept the apology. It's, you know, I don't want to give him too much credit for apologizing. I mean, that's probably 30 years late, but big on you to accept that apology.
You know, I did see it come full circle. And like you said, better late than never sometimes. And I think like, you know, time changes all, Chris, it really does. I can think about the guy that I was, you know, when I was in my 20s, you know, and in my 30s, you know, and the guy that I'm now, 60, I'm 60 now, you know, 40 years later.
Yeah.
You know, we all change.
We all changed. Nothing exemplifies that sentiment more than this fact. Decades after all the drama and contract disputes, in 2017, Eric signed a one-day contract to officially retire as a member of the Los Angeles Rams. There's only one Eric Dickerson. A running back about my height with rec specs, a cowboy collar whizzing by defenders like a Trans Am. When I got the privilege of having a conversation with Eric, I walked away thinking, this guy was truly one in a million. He's got the personality, he's got the records that may never fall, but he left a much larger mark on the game in just being a trailblazer. He did it Eric Dickerson's way, and now others can do it their way. Once again, I'm Chris Long, and this is American Prodigies, Becoming Great. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us out. Check back next week for a new episode. Thank you so much for listening. Be great out there.